It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 40 degrees. It is foggy. It is misty. Out at the airport, they have northeast winds at 15 miles per hour, and they continue to have 6 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a 40% chance of rain. East winds to 20, gusting to 25 today, turning to southeast tonight, gusting to 35 tonight, and as high as 40 tomorrow from the southeast. Coming up on the Midday Report, GCI cell phone users in Women's Bay will have no service while the company upgrades a tower. Today, possibly tomorrow. Members of the State House and Senate are working on a wide-ranging education bill. They've found some common ground, but also areas where they are still far apart. And a Delta Junction man has pleaded guilty to a charge of conspiracy. He defrauded investors out of more than $700,000 for a pot cafe.
Live from NPR News in New York City, I'm Dwahli Saikautau. FBI Director Christopher Wray is in Israel today for an unannounced visit. He met with Israeli officials for talks about threats facing both countries. More on this story from NPR's Ryan Lucas.
The FBI says Wray's meeting with Israeli intelligence and law enforcement officials focused on current and future threats, and that Wray reiterated the FBI's support to Israel following the October 7th Hamas attacks. In a statement, Wray said the Bureau's close partnership with its Israeli counterparts helped the FBI move quickly in response to the attacks. Wray also met with the FBI legal attaché office in Tel Aviv to thank agents and staff there for their work providing services to U.S. victims of the Hamas assault and their families. The Bureau says it will continue to respond to Israeli government requests for FBI support. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
In Kansas City, Missouri, police there say shots were fired near Union Station just following an historic celebration of the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win. At this hour, at least 10 people have been injured, but the situation is fluid and the numbers may change. A police spokesman says two armed people have been taken into custody. Democrats flipped a Republican seat in a special election in New York last night. It was to replace ousted Congressman George Santos. NPR's Deidre Walsh reports border security was a leading issue.
Democrat Tom Suozzi told supporters on Long Island that voters are focused on immigration and the economy and want lawmakers to work on bipartisan solutions.
It's time to move beyond the petty partisan bickering and the finger-pointing. It's time to focus on how to solve the problems.
The former three-term House member defeated Republican Nassau County legislator Mazie Pillup and criticized her for opposing the bipartisan Senate border bill. Moderate suburban voters in this district say the influx of migrants into New York City is impacting the local economy and jobs. Suozzi's strategy could be a model for other swing races in November. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
Uber and Lyft drivers are holding strikes and protests across the country today, NPR's Derek Kerr reports.
Ride-hail drivers say their wages have plummeted over the last couple of years after Uber and Lyft changed the way they pay drivers. Instead of paying by mileage and time, earnings are now calculated with an algorithm. Drivers say their goal is to draw attention to poor working conditions and encourage more regulation of the industry. They say the companies can take up to 80% of their fares and are demanding a living wage and more safety features. Thousands of drivers are participating in the strike, which is taking place in dozens of cities across the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Uber and Lyft spokespeople say these strikes haven't had a meaningful impact on wait times.
This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Starting today, GCI cell phone users in Women's Bay, just outside Kodiak city limits, will temporarily be without coverage while a local cell tower is upgraded. A text message from the company sent out over the weekend said that services including calls, text messages, and mobile data will be unavailable through Thursday night at 6 p.m., and that includes emergency calls to 911. Jennifer Nelson is the Director of Rural Affairs for GCI. She says the scheduled outage has been pushed back one day and will affect only customers in range of one specific tower.
Our technicians will be upgrading equipment on our cellular tower in the Women's Bay area, so it'll only be affecting that area, that coverage area that tower serves.
Nelson says weather delayed GCI technicians, but they were scheduled to arrive in Kodiak to start the work this morning. The outage could potentially last from this morning until Friday, although Nelson expects service will be restored before then. This could impact emergency response in Women's Bay for residents who only have a cell phone and no other communication device. Women's Bay Service Area Fire Chief David Conrad told KMXT, quote, "As the area responder, we have had little communication from GCI prior to this scheduled outage. As a communications company, GCI should really work on its communications," end quote. But Nelson says GCI landline and internet connections will still be available during the outage for Women's Bay residents.
The outage will only be impacting wireless service, including calls, text messages, and mobile data. Internet will still be online, and customers will be able to utilize voice over Wi-Fi on their phones as well if you have an internet connection.
Mobile service from other providers will also still be available along the Chiniac Highway headed south from Kodiak City, accounting for the usual dropout spots. Nelson says the lone GCI tower in Women's Bay is one of several around the island that are part of the upgrade to 5G. GCI will send a follow-up message to its mobile customers in Kodiak when the Women's Bay tower work is completed and service is restored. Members of the State House and Senate are working out the details of a wide-ranging education bill. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, leaders say they've found some common ground but are further apart on at least one key issue: how much to increase state education funding.
On most of the sprawling education bill, the House and Senate are seeing more or less eye to eye, at least according to Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican.
I think probably 85%, maybe more. We're more than close. We're in alignment. Maybe not in total agreement, but at least alignment.
But as anyone who's ever done a home improvement project can tell you, that last 15% is a heavy lift. Here's Senate Rules Chair Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat.
The issues that are remaining are big issues, and we don't have an agreement on the BSA, which is probably the biggest one, for example.
The BSA is the base student allocation. That's the base per student education funding, which has been at the center of debate since the legislative session began in January. The bill offered by the House majority includes a $300 increase. Senators have said they want substantially more. Last year, the House and Senate agreed to one-time funding equivalent to more than twice that $300 increase, and advocates for local school districts are asking for an increase of more than $1,400. Senator Jesse Bjorkman, a Nikiski Republican, says a significant bump in education funding is essential.
If we expect our students to have at least the same as what they do now, or hopefully better, educational opportunities and outcomes, we need to invest more in our K-12 educational opportunities.
And students, teachers, school board members, and administrators have been crowding the halls of the Capitol as the two sides work towards a deal, testifying on Monday to the Senate Education Committee on the need for more state funding.
There are only so many branches you can cut from a tree before it dies. Alaska education is to the stump.
Maggie Grenier is a student at Nikiski Middle High School on the Kenai Peninsula, and she says some key programs are on the chopping block.
At the current levels of education funding, my school will lose this middle school student council, our high school student council, world language, music or art, advanced classes, a CTE class, middle school musical theater, and at least one high school and middle school sport, and our assistant principal position and two teachers.
And the situation is even more dire in Sleep Mute, a village of less than 100 on the banks of the Kuskokwim River. Student Kylie Hayden told senators her school has been condemned and is at risk of collapse because lawmakers failed to provide money for a new roof.
We need major repairs to our school, but here's why we can't just fix it on our own. We have no way to get the extra money. We have no tax base in our region to draw from, so the only thing our district can do to address the problem on their own is to take money away from things like curriculum and staff and direct it towards maintenance issues.
The next step for the House Education Bill is to move to the House floor, though it's unclear when it'll get there. But Johnson, the House Rules Chair, says he's not expecting all of his caucus's priorities to be included.
You know, there may be one issue that we don't agree with, but overall the package has got enough in it that we could maybe hold our nose and vote on some of the stuff we don't like.
And Senate President Gary Stevens says the bipartisan Senate majority is open to a deal.
This is the place where compromises are made.
No one seems ready to predict when those compromises will come together. And even if lawmakers do, it's unclear what's ahead if the bill passes. Johnson says talks on the bill to this point have not involved the governor's administration. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Representative Sarah Vance of Homer apologized on the House floor on Monday for comments she made in a House Tribal Affairs Committee last week. Committee members heard the testimony from people working in organizations serving Alaskan Native peoples on the disparities in assault rates and violence against Indigenous women, which is several times higher than the general population. After the meeting, Vance said she felt the presentation excluded the experiences of white women who are victims of sexual violence.
It's the same thing. But what I continue to hear in this committee over and over again is if you're the only one. And I know that's not your heart, but I ask that when you come and present, that you remember that you have white sisters who are going through the same thing, and they don't feel they have justice either.
In response, Representative Ashley Carrick from Fairbanks, who is also a committee member, highlighted the reason for focusing on challenges for Indigenous women.
While the suffering is the same for victims, the causes of that violence are not the same. And the response to that violence is not the same, and the justice for the victims is not the same. And until it's the same, we have got a lot of work to do.
After the comments, the Alaska House Coalition called for Vance to apologize. In a press release, Representative Maxine Dilbert, who is Koyukon Athabascan from Fairbanks, said, quote, "As the only Alaska Native woman in the legislature, knowing my Native sisters are disproportionately affected by these high rates of violence within Alaska and other states cuts me to the core," end quote. Vance apologized on the House floor that same day, nearly 1 week after her initial comments.
But to every victim and every Alaska Native voice, you have been heard, and you will continue to be heard in this body. And I ask you to forgive me for not listening with understanding first.
During this legislative session, Vance has sponsored four bills related to human and sex trafficking.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
A Delta Junction man has pleaded guilty to a charge of conspiracy to commit wire fraud as part of a plea deal with the U.S. Attorney's Office to settle a case in which he was charged with defrauding investors out of more than $700,000 they thought would be used to develop a cannabis theme store in Salcha. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Brian Cordy and his wife Candy bought the old Midway Lodge several years ago so they and their investors from around the country could transform it into a so-called cannabis theme park they intended to call a Bud and Breakfast. The Cordys began soliciting prospective investors in 2017 to buy into the venture, which they described as a place where they could cultivate and sell marijuana and customers could consume it on site. But FBI investigators say the Cordys enticed the investors with unreal unrealistically inflated estimates on the profits the project would generate. The investigators say the Cordes used false and fraudulent claims to get 22 people to invest a total of $722,000 in a company called Ice Fog Holdings, which Brian Corde managed. Investigators said the company, quote, had no meaningful current or prospective revenue stream and little to no prospect to obtain a license from the Alaska Marijuana Control Office, unquote. The U.S. Attorney's Office indicted the Cordes in April on 4 federal wire fraud-related charges, and last month, 53-year-old Brian Corde accepted the prosecutor's offer to plead guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud in exchange for dropping the other charges against him and all charges against his wife. Corde still insists he never intended to defraud the investors, but said in a brief interview Monday that he agreed to the plea deal mainly to clear his wife's name.
The prosecutors gave that as an offer.
Under the terms of the deal, Corde agrees to plead guilty to being part of a conspiracy to commit wire fraud from January 2017 to January 2020, and that he acted knowingly and with intent to defraud. Assistant U.S. Attorney Tom Bradley is the lead prosecutor in the case. He's recommended a sentence of up to 3 years in prison, followed by up to 3 years of supervised release. Corde also will have to pay a total of up to $600,000 in restitution to 19 victims who say he defrauded them. He also could face fines. A U.S. Attorney's Office spokesperson said Judge Ralph Beislein will be presiding over the May 3rd sentencing, and he'll have to formally agree to the terms of the prosecutor's office during that proceeding. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Kotzebue's aging water infrastructure shut down water for a quarter of the city's residents earlier this month. And the city of Kotzebue and Northwest Arctic Borough have declared the situation a disaster. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, the city says it is working against time, as freezing conditions could potentially shut down the water supply for months.
Kotzebue's water system runs on what's known as a loop system. Pipes flow water back and forth from the city's centrally located water treatment plant. But the largest and oldest of the city's loops, known as the Swan Lake Loop, was clogged, compromising water quality and supply to nearly 200 homes. But this isn't the first time there's been issues on this loop. Russ Ferguson is Kotzebue's Public Works Director. He says the pipes on the loop froze about 30 years ago.
That loop froze up solid for 4 months, January through April.
The majority of Kotzebue went without water and sewer until a springtime thaw. Ferguson says he doesn't believe the situation will be as serious this time, in part because of a partnership with a local contractor, more access to de-thawing equipment, and that only half the Swan Lake Loop is currently frozen.
The entire 14,000 lineal feet isn't frozen. It's roughly 7,000. And now we have, with the advent of ground thaw units, we have the ability to start working on this system.
But there were problems on the loop even before the blockage, as recently as last month.
3 weeks ago, we had a conserve water notice because we were losing 100,000 gallons a day from somewhere and couldn't determine where. We were able to find that, and it was on Swan Lake Loop.
The city determined that a faulty weld connecting two pipes caused the burst. Ferguson says a second weld failed last week on the same loop in a separate incident, resulting in the loss of over 50,000 gallons of water. That's about half of what an average American household uses in 1 year. Ferguson says supplemental heat pumps also failed about 2 weeks ago and are on back order. Now that the Swan Lake Loop is partially frozen, the city is racing against time before cold temperatures freeze more of the water main and individual service lines.
As this happens with the reduced flow in sewer, we are concerned about sewer freezing up, which when this happened in 90, all the sewers froze up. Having half of that loop still operational, that is not as much of a danger, but it's still a very real concern, and we're taking a proactive approach.
According to the city, as of Monday, nearly 60 homes were without running water, some lacking plumbing, while dozens more have running but non-potable water. Some residents have resorted to honey buckets. if water is not flowing on the Swan Lake Loop, other residences' water and sewer could be affected too. Ferguson says the city is also looking for funds to assist residents with frozen service lines.
City code does not allow for the city to be working on people's service lines. But because of this emergency, the city is putting the bill for the residences on that loop. It's going to be $1,500 to $2,000 per resident.
City Manager Tessa Baldwin says the loop repair alone will cost money that the city just doesn't currently have.
So it's about $14 million just to replace the water main. This does not include service lines, is what I was told.
Baldwin says the city is looking for an additional $14 million to replace another aging loop in desperate need of repair that supplies water to the hospital and surrounding areas. The city, the Native Village of Kotzebue, and Kikiktagruk Inupiaq Corporation are delivering water and buckets to residents affected by the water crisis. Baldwin says the city is not sure when the loop will be repaired.
We don't know an estimated timeline just yet. What we do know is that when we did dig up the water main, it took us 2 to 3 days just for one section of the water main to be dug up because of the frozen solid ground.
City staff are asking residents to report their water situation if they experience any changes. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Midwives in Alaska are speaking out against a plan from Governor Mike Dunleavy to dissolve the board that governs their profession. The executive order dissolving the midwife board is one of 12 that the governor submitted last month to the legislature. Mary Yanagawa is a midwife and former president of the Midwives Association of Alaska. She says the board is critical to the profession and patient care.
The states where families can have the best options for midwifery care are states that are licensed, and they have a board made up of peers, and that board oversees regulation and scope of practice.
Board certification is required in order for midwife work to be covered by insurance and to be reimbursed by state Medicaid, which now serves low-income Alaskans. Midwives say they must be certified by a board of their peers. If the board is dissolved, it's unclear how certification would work. The responsibilities of the board would be transferred to state employees. Yanagawa says it's hard to imagine how that would be effective since the state is already struggling to support the board's work. Yanagawa says decades ago, midwives went to Juneau to advocate for licensing. She says dissolving the board is a step in the wrong direction.
They advocated to have a board. They advocated to get insurance reimbursement. And many states in the lower 48 still don't have licensure. They still don't have a board, but they're all fighting for it.
A spokesperson for Dunleavy wrote in an email that the executive order, quote, eliminates duplication of functions and provides a single point of responsibility for the licensing and regulation, close quote, of direct entry midwives. That's similar to the rationale the governor provided for 11 other executive orders, largely aiming at reconfiguring and eliminating boards and commissions. The Senate took an early step towards rejecting some of Dunleavy's proposed executive orders on Monday, including the order dissolving the board for direct entry midwifery.
Microsoft says foreign hackers are already exploiting artificial intelligence tools. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute. The tech giant is pointing to hackers working for China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia. Microsoft analyzed its own products and partner OpenAI's and said the use of generative AI for hacking was at an early stage. Lyft's stock briefly soared because of an apparent typo in an earnings report. The company wrongly added an extra zero, making it appear that a key profit measure was expected to improve by much more than it was actually forecasting. The company corrected the statement. Sony's PlayStation 5 video game console is struggling. The company is expecting fewer sales than previously thought, with no major game releases coming up. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 14th day of February, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:42. It will set again at 6:05, giving us 9 hours and 22 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 48 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 51 degrees set in 1927, and our record low was minus 4 set in 1972. Chilly 1972. It is currently 40 degrees. It's foggy and misty. There's a northeast wind at 15 miles per hour at the airport, and they continue to report 6 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 40% chance of rain for the rest of the day and mostly cloudy skies. High near 42, east winds gusting to 25. They continue to go for the northeast, though, for now. Rain is expected tonight at least after 1 a.m., low around 37 tonight, southeast winds to 25, gusting to 35, and look for those southeast winds to continue along with the rain tomorrow, gusting to 30, as high as 40 tomorrow, and as high as 45 tomorrow night. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 5:14 p.m. here on the east side and be 7.4 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:03 p.m. of 8/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:43 this afternoon and be 12.6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:41 p.m. of 1.5 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning for tomorrow. East winds to 30 knots today and tonight with 19-foot seas coming down to 18 feet tonight. For tomorrow, east winds to 40 knots for tomorrow and tomorrow night. 16-foot seas building to 21 feet tomorrow night. And look for east winds to 35 knots on Friday with 19-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today and tomorrow. Northeast 35 today, seas to 10 feet. East 30 tonight with 9-foot seas in the Shelikof. And for tomorrow, east winds to 25 knots, increasing to 40 knots in the afternoon. 4-0, 11-foot seas, coming down to 10 feet Thursday night. Still, they are calling for east winds to 40 knots on Friday and 10-foot seas. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, February 15th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office with any questions at 907-486-9310. And notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education work session on Thursday. That will happen at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F-140 of the old high school wing. You can find the meeting agenda and packet at the Kodiak Island Borough School District website on the Board Docs tab. Call the Secretary to the Board of Education for more information at 907-486-7566. Things happening at the public library include today's Lego Club that happens at 3:30 p.m. and kids under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time. That's for children ages 3 to 6. And also tomorrow at 3 p.m. the next chess club gathering. And Fridays at 10:30 a.m., the library hosts a Lapsit story time. That's for babies up to 3. Next Friday, the library will be having its video game club meeting. That will happen at 3:30 p.m. That's for ages 13 and older. Again, library's video game club, 3:30 p.m. on Friday. On Saturday, the Pokemon Club will be meeting at 1 p.m. Please bring your own card sets. Alternative crafts will be provided for younger children and for patrons grades 1 through 8. The escape room is open at the library. Sessions are Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m., Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Saturdays at 11 a.m. Patrons under 14 must be accompanied by an adult, and it's for groups of four or less. Call or stop in at the library to sign up. And February's Genre Reading Challenge is going on. Explore different genres and record your progress on kodiak.beanstack.org in a bingo card format. For more information, ask for help at the front desk of the library. For any information about these things, call the library at 907-486-8686. Senior citizens of Kodiak is in need of paper bags. Please be sure they're not torn or soiled. You can drop them off at the Senior Center between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Thank you. And there's going to be a four-part community workshop on addiction and recovery with an emphasis on methamphetamines as well as fentanyl and other opioids. The workshop is designed for friends and families of substance abusers as well as service providers and just concerned family members. That's going on 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday, the first four Saturdays of March. For more information, call them at 907-539-5736.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.